Okay, good afternoon, Melbourne. Good afternoon, Australia. And good day or good evening to all our international viewers or listeners as well. I'm Helen Taylor. Welcome to my show, Inspired Radio. I'm here with you every Monday, 4 p.m. Melbourne, Australia time, and Sunday, 11 p.m. Central Time for US and Canada for conversations and stories to inspire you. This is the BBS Radio TV platform, and we're going live to over 190 outlets worldwide. Before we get started, though, I'd like to thank the sponsors. Thank you, sponsors, for the show. You're our foundation and you keep the show alive. So thank you very much to each and every one of you. Inspired Radio is all about change and getting uncomfortable and shaking up the status quo because we're breaking free from limiting systems and embracing our infinite potential. My guests are here to tell their story, to reveal how they've overcome change and made better lives for themselves and others, of course, and to inspire you with their stories, because storytelling is changing the world. Today on the show, I'm joined by someone who asks the kind of questions that don't let you off the hook, the deep ones, you know? Annette is also known as Annabelle Hummel. And she's been exploring a powerful and provocative question. Why do some people truly transform their lives while others remain stuck in repetition, despite insight, despite therapy or spiritual practice? It's a very good question. It's the driving force behind her upcoming book, Photonic Healing: The Mechanics of Human Consciousness, where she blends science, consciousness, and lived experience into a bold new perspective on transformation. And here's what I really want to know. How does a mother of two transform into a photonic healer? That's a journey worth unpacking. So let's find out. Welcome, 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 Annette.
Hi, Helen. How are you going?
Good, thank you. Good. So that's a good question, isn't it? So before we get deep into the photonics and energy, how did you get on this path?
It's been a really wild journey, and I ask myself that as well. It's like, I guess, being a mother of two, and at this point in time, they're 3 and 5, so it's been over their lifespan that this is unfolded. But my whole journey unfolded just after the birth of my first daughter. And so it started from there, but it actually started a lot earlier than that. I didn't have the easiest childhood. And one of the memories from my childhood, when I was 6,
Yep.
I made a promise to myself that my children would have a very different childhood than me. And
Right.
that
Yes.
promise really shaped me unconsciously as well to, I guess, find the right father for my children, to provide them with a stable environment growing up with, but also for me too, because for me, being a mother, it's not just, I guess, doing the things and, being there. And it's also about my journey and who I am and the depth of me. And I always knew that, there was something deeper within me. There was more potential, yes, but there was also more for me to explore as well.
There's something
And
else going on, wasn't there? Something else going on. I think everyone can relate to what you're saying there too. Adversity is a very, very significant thing in our lives. But even to have that thought as a child, I had that when I was, when I first had my children, I had the epiphany that I'm not going to raise them like my parents. I'm going to do something different. But you were having that epiphany as a child.
Yeah, and I didn't realize it at the time, but I did. And perhaps it's just the way that I perceive energy and my sensitivities back then, or perhaps it was just the environment that I grew up in.
So hang
But
on.
to have
So
that awareness.
what were you taught? What do you mean how you were perceiving energy, and what were you doing as a child?
Just the way that we perceive each other's nervous system. So energy is a broad word, and I try to avoid it because energy is everything. But just how we perceive each other, and living within a household that was based on survival and constricting states, as a child to look at that. And for me, I was the youngest as well, and to see, I guess, my older siblings and my mum and the whole situation kind of as it was.
So
and me and
you were watching the dynamics of
yeah, the
what was
dynamics.
going on, because you weren't saying, as a young toddler or child, you weren't saying constricting energies. That's
No, of
current,
course not.
the current version of you talking. But that child was watching the dynamics of her older siblings and parents. And what were you noticing?
I guess like thinking into it, I didn't specifically know. I just knew that it wasn't right.
Yes,
I knew
yes.
that, like, as a child, it's like you don't sit there and say, well, mum's stressed because she's bringing in a single income, she's having to do all of this and, putting responsibilities on older children and the family being broken up. Like, you don't sit there and perceive that as a child. You just know, I guess, for me, I just knew that this wasn't right and this wasn't not a normal childhood. And
Yes.
to know that at six was just, yeah, I can't exactly explain that, but I just had that perception.
Yeah, I hear you loud and clear, because I was about the same age, having the same things. I was thinking, why can't they love each other? Why isn't everybody happy? I just didn't understand. Okay. So you've been questioning since you started walking, by the sounds of it.
And it's not just questioning, it's curiosity too.
Yes.
Because it's not sitting there being, I guess, judgmental on it. It's saying, well, why is it like this? Why is it like this? And that's been my whole journey, is to dive deeper into my curiosity and questioning, and not just, I guess, settling for everything that's on the surface or everything that I'm told, because,
That's beautiful. That's absolutely beautiful. And I mean, that opening statement that I made about why do some people truly transform and others remain stuck, do you think that asking those questions and that curiosity is something to do with it?
Absolutely.
Mm.
Absolutely. Because for me, curiosity, if you can't ask questions about yourself, and there's a difference between being, judgmental and saying, oh, why am I like this, than being curious and going, well, I'm acting in this way. Where is this from? How can I, change positively? Curiosity and judgment, they are two completely different, states, and curiosity
Yes.
is an emotion as well, but it
Yes.
can transform into a state.
And even as you were talking, you could hear judgment is closed.
Yeah, it's a constricting
It's
state.
curiosity is open. Beautiful, beautiful. Okay. All right. I wonder though, do you think, is that wired into some of us and not wired into others?
I don't believe it's about wiring. So if we look at emotions are a communication. So they're a signal from the field and they arise. And so we can be curious about something, and that means it's a path that's opening for us. But it's an emotion, so it doesn't last. Whereas curiosity is a state, is more intentional, and it needs to be learned. So, we can have a question pop into our mind and it's up to us whether we follow it or not. But that's when the discipline comes into it. So we need to be conscious about our curiosity and the questions that we're asking and actually following through on it. Because the more that we can do that, the more it actually turns into a state within us, and the more that we can embody it, and the more that opens up the potentials around us, which is really cool.
Okay, everybody. I know we might have lost just a few of you out there because she just went deep again. This woman loves the depth. She loves just going there. And yeah, for some of them out there, firstly, what's the field for people who don't understand what the field is?
Sure. The field in my framework is basically our broadcast system. So it's how we perceive others' states and nervous systems and different aspects of who we are. So it's when we, walk into a room and we see somebody and we instantly get a feeling.
So are
So
you
we can.
talking about what has been called an aura?
Yes,
Right.
yes,
Okay.
yes, yes, yep. But for me, it's looking deep, and it's not just saying, well, we just have an aura. It's well, what is it? How does it work? And what is composed of it?
Yes.
And so, for me asking my questions,
Yes.
it's we have a nervous system, and our nervous system is our internal compass from our field. And so our field, it picks up other people's states and emotions, and it also broadcasts our own. And our nervous system translates that to our body.
Well, it's a bit like an antenna. It sends and receives and sends and receives, doesn't it?
Yeah,
But again,
exactly.
let's get back to where we were before, to the 6-year-old. So she grows up and she goes and gets herself married and she has children, because what you said earlier was really things started to change when you had your first child, right? So tell me what changed? What started to happen?
So I started to have really interesting experiences with spirit and I guess grandparents dropping in as well, and not really knowing it at the time, but then it opened up a path opened up for me to sit within a psychic and mediumship circle. And so that was
So
when things really started to shift.
but up until then, in the interim in your life, hadn't had any experiences like that. It's life was just pretty status quo, so to speak.
Well, it's interesting because I wouldn't say that it was status quo, but I didn't have an easy childhood. I didn't have an easy teenagehood. And from my early teenagehood, I relied a lot on, alcohol and substance. So basically, it wasn't so much addiction in the sense of addicted to a substance, it was addiction to who I became when I was on it. And so, for the first time in my life, when I started drinking at 12 years old, people started to accept me. And so I thought, well, this is who I am. This is the person I am. And, that pattern, it's, repeated until I became pregnant, basically. And so, I didn't know who, or I didn't like who I was when
And
I wasn't.
I must say, Annette, thank you so much for going there, love, because hey, all it says to me is, boy, it must have been tough for you to start alcohol at 12. You must have been going through hell, okay? But thank you for being frank and being open with everybody, because that isn't an easy thing to do, okay? Coming from, I'm an ex-drug addict, alcoholic, drug dealer, like whatever, I've kind of come to terms with all of that. But I hear what you're saying, and a lot of people out there will too. We get lost in conformity, we get lost in behaving and being who we're supposed to be. And it's our only way of trying to keep connected with, something else.
Exactly.
Thank you for sharing that part. So you went off the rails, off track, as people like to see it, or they like to put it, and then you fell pregnant and everything started to change. Is that how it worked?
I was always sensitive to other people. And I think, using alcohol and substance suppressed that. And so, therefore that funny, witty, charming person was able to come out. And so, falling pregnant was the first 9 months in my life where I was sober. And so, I started to have all these visual experiences, but I didn't really know what it was. I just kind of thought, oh, well, that's kind of, my grandmother-in-law that's just popping up in the kitchen. I'm like, okay, it just kind of made sense. It was natural.
Were you seeing her? Were you hearing her? How was it working for you?
It's a pretty cool story, but it was just one night. It was a week before I gave birth, and this grandma in particular, that's who we named our first daughter after. And I was walking through the kitchen, just going to the toilet as you do when you're 9 months pregnant, having to go multiple times, and I just kept seeing this lady in the kitchen, just in my mind's eye, and she was holding a pink birthday cake, and I was like, oh, that's my partner's grandma. I just knew it was. And we didn't know the sex of our child. We waited until birth. But the really cool part was a week later, I went into labor on this grandmother's birthday, and then she ended up being a little girl, which was really beautiful.
That's incredible. Birthday, and she's there holding the pink cake. So she, and you're opening up. So you've got yourself 9 months sober because you're pregnant and you want the best for your child, right? And bless her for being the catalyst for you as well, I suppose, in all of it. And your, I don't know what you call them, your abilities, whatever you want to label them, start to open up. Okay, so then your little one is born, and what happens? How does the journey into mediumship start to happen?
So it's just, I'll never forget seeing her on my chest and her eyes the first time they opened looking at me, it just absolutely cracked my heart open.
Right.
And perhaps that was the real catalyst,
Yes.
seeing your first child on your chest and just seeing their eyes look into yours. It's just a whole array of emotions that just come in then. But at that point, I was still very ignorant about, I guess, my life and what I'd been through. And so, I had no idea of the journey that I was about to step into,
Yeah.
but it was stepping into the mediumship circle. So my mentor at the time, or he became my mentor, I had a reading with him, and he basically said to me, you're sensitive to energy, you're sensitive to spirit, you should be studying this. And so, he had a circle, and a place opened up about 4 months after I'd given birth to my eldest daughter. And so I thought, I'm gonna do it. And it was crazy because it was the first time in my life that I ever stepped outside of, what was known within my circle.
Yes.
And, that was friends, that was family, that was everything. Like, it was very odd for me to go and do that, and even for me to say that to people, everyone would be like, oh, you're doing that kind of thing.
Yeah. Who is this woman? Who is she? She has a baby and then, she starts doing all this crazy stuff. Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's crazy, isn't
people don't know how to handle like change of that sort of sh that caliber.
it? Yeah, exactly. And for me, I like to embrace things when they come, and especially things that really spark my curiosity, because I remember sitting in circle and going, there's something in this that everybody needs to know. And, I know that we all layer it with our own interpretation and experience, but, I guess the mechanics and the architecture below it, I knew that there was something in there that was so beneficial for everybody to
Yep.
really understand.
Wow. And it's not like you had much of anything else to do, having a newborn baby and a home and
Oh no, nothing, not much.
a Wow, that's incredible. So you opened up Pandora's dot box. You opened up a door, or it opened up for you by the sounds of
Did, yeah, it
it.
did.
Yeah.
Well, I was presented with an opportunity, and it was my choice of whether I would walk down it or not.
Yes.
If I decided not to do that, then perhaps, I guess the healing aspect, maybe something else would have opened up rather than the mediumship aspect. But, we don't know that. And for me, something opened up. I thought, this is interesting. I'm going to give it a go, even though it's, left of center. It's not ordinary for who I had been.
Sure.
I thought, I'm open to experience. I always have been.
Yeah.
And, I wanted to, I guess, to see where it would go.
That's really brave of you. And we all thank you for doing that because what you're doing, the work you're doing that we'll get into is absolutely necessary in this current time on Earth. So what happened with the mediumship? What did you learn to develop or the skills that you had? How did you said that with alcohol and substances, it was more to stop feeling because you were so sensitive and you were tuning in. How did it help with that side of you?
So it's actually interesting because I remember when I first started the circle, I sat in circle, and at the end, we all were given an option, the opportunity to ask a question. And when I first started, nobody would ask a question. It
Right.
would go around the circle and say, no, no questions, no questions, no questions. And it just came to me, and I was like, we're in this, I guess. For me, this whole world had opened up, and I'm like, why isn't anyone asking questions? So I made a promise to myself that every week I would ask a question, regardless of how silly the question was.
Yep.
And it was actually that point that I really started to refine my curiosity, because I would go in some weeks and I would be like, I don't know, this question's silly, I already half know the answer, I felt foolish asking it, but I did anyway. And then other weeks I'd go, this question's awesome, I really like this. And so that that curiosity was there, but what it really taught me over all of it, regardless of all, the psychic abilities, the, protection, all of that, it really taught me to trust myself. And that's what this journey has been all about. It's like, trust the signals that I'm getting from, the external environment, to trust what's coming through, to trust, what's in my heart, to trust the questions, to have the confidence to follow that as well. And that ultimately has, really been it, because, my confidence wasn't great, but actually putting myself out there and doing this and standing up in circle in front of everyone and then going out and doing readings and really putting myself out there in that aspect, it was building my confidence and it was building my trust. And so, I thought, I'm just going to be a medium my whole life. I'm just going to be doing readings, That's what I kind of had foolishly thought, but that all got tipped on its head, didn't it?
Absolutely. And I think there's a lot of people out there that will understand your story and relate to your story because, if you're born or if you cultivate, sort of emotional, energy, feelings, instincts, intuition, whatever, usually we're born into an environment and a family that don't acknowledge or accept any of that at all. For whatever reason it is, we end up being the single person in the clan that is seeing and operating differently than everybody in the clan. And something has to happen in our life, doesn't it, to catapult us out of the clan and start connecting with other people who are having similar journeys. Because, as you said, you learn to trust yourself. Were you ever going to learn to trust yourself with your family?
I don't think so, because when you're caught in survival, it's hard to. And it's not necessarily them, it was also me and the identities that I'd formed within me, because I found as a child that it was safe to be unseen, that it was safe to stay quiet, that it was safe to remove yourself. So how could I have put myself out there within my family, which bring up our most vulnerabilities, when I held these within me? I had to cultivate them externally and then bring them back into my family to help, repair those relationships.
That's wonderful. Wow, what a beautiful, beautiful statement. You had to go outside of it to cultivate, and then bring back into your family as well. That is just beautiful. So, okay, mediumship, readings, trusting yourself, all of that started to happen. Then what?
So, really, the catalyst in all of this was it happened in November 2024, and I was kind of deep within it. I was doing my business, doing readings. I was going to expos. I was sitting within a physical mediumship circle, and all the while being a mother of two and
Two by this
doing
stage,
two by this stage, yes. And doing all of that, like it was a huge amount on my plate. And anyway, what happened in November 2024 was I came down with Ross River virus. Yeah. And so that lasted practically all of last year, it lasted about 11 months. And it was absolutely the most challenging point in my life and my journey. And so Ross River virus, for those who don't know what it is, it sits within the nervous system. For anyone who's had tendonitis or, tennis elbow, it's like that, but 10 times worse. And,
As
the joint pain, yeah, the joint pains, they would, it started within my hands and then up my arms and then sit within my shoulders. And it was excruciating. And, some days I couldn't walk, some days, I couldn't move my hands.
wow.
And I'd still, had to care for my children. And so, on top of that, a really heavy fatigue fell as well. And so the actual virus itself only lasts for about 3 weeks, but then it sits within the nervous system after that. And that's why the recovery can be so long from it, because the nervous system holds that. And so, it was such a challenging journey for me physically and emotionally. And at the point that it happened, I guess whether that was from my own awareness or whether, just energetically I couldn't hold it, but everything that, wasn't absolutely necessary began to fall away. And so, that was reading work, that was the mediumship circle and, friendships and, other, I guess, aspects in my life that I realized I'd been holding up. And so, it was really the start of my energetic sovereignty, because all I could do was focus on myself and my children. And
So it was a catalyst for you completely doing a reset.
absolutely.
And what
And
was
it's,
leaving you were things that you couldn't hold on to anymore or were not to hold on to anymore. It's an interesting viewpoint because a lot of people don't look at things that way, do they? They think that everything's going wrong, they're losing everything. But that gorgeous curiosity of yours was seeing it in a more positive way.
I wouldn't say that I was positive the entire time. I just had no other choice. And, for many times, it wasn't like, oh, this is an amazing experience. It was, oh my God, this is like, this is so painful. This is so exhausting. And, I was pulling away from relationships that I've been putting way too much energy and power into. And that was, heartbreaking as well, because, the imbalances in my entire life were revealed. And I had no idea, no idea that imbalance was there.
And
I thought that I
I
had a
suppose
balanced life.
what I'm hearing is you weren't seeing it that way at the time while you were in it, but hindsight's a beautiful thing, isn't it? You can look.
No, I knew that that was happening during it. I knew that the power, I guess, the power imbalances in my relationship were revealing themselves, because it's like, when I collapsed, who was there to support me?
Right.
And, there wasn't very many people at all. And
Yeah,
so that was a
it
big
them all out,
shock.
doesn't it? It really does.
Yeah, totally. And like, feeling it all as well. It's like, when you're putting so much energy into something, whether, it's a relationship, a friendship, your thoughts go to it, and it's constantly like that. But I didn't even have the energy to do that. So to realize that my thoughts were going there, and having to consciously pull them back so that, I could hold it all within me just to get through the day. That was really revealing.
Yeah, because you needed every single drop of that energy, is what I'm hearing you say. Yeah. Okay. So you were even capturing the thought energy because that couldn't go astray either. Wow, you were really having a hard time. Yeah.
It's interesting, because as I began to do that, something strange began to happen too. This framework started to reveal itself. And, I guess I'd gotten to a point where, I'd studied particular people and their work, and then, I had studied what my mentor was doing. But then it had gotten to a point where I'd been asking questions, and, there wasn't answers for them.
Right.
Nobody could answer them. Or I was seeing holes
You were
in,
outgrowing them, were you?
yeah, but I was seeing holes in, I guess, other people's framework and work as well. But, I guess that's their boundary. And so once I started to gain my energetic sovereignty, I guess the power that I was able to utilize internally, it started to reveal to me, this framework and how it could explain things in another way. And, the question that I
Oh
always,
my gosh, I get it. I get it. So as soon as you stopped looking outside of yourself at everybody else and trying to help that you thinking they had to help you find the pieces, you started looking within yourself and you started finding the answers.
Exactly. But, we all need to go through that phase of learning, don't we? It's like, we have to be the student, because if we're not the student, then, we've got nothing to grow upon.
Well,
And so,
we're taught to look outside of ourselves.
oh, absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. And so,
So,
I'd been the student, but I definitely had gotten to the point where I was ready to outgrow that. And
sure.
then, this illness came, and this framework started to reveal itself. So I was having these really profound insights, and the energy associated with that was huge. And so I was having this huge expansion, but because I was not stabilized, I wasn't holding any stabilizing states, I was still within constriction, I was burning myself out even more on top of that.
Yeah.
So, I was pulling this all together, having these profound insights, still having to be a mother, still having to do the house, the cooking, the chores, and all the emotional aspects of children, and not sleeping as well.
Yes.
It's no wonder that I, completely burnt
There's a
out.
beautiful there's a beautiful phrase for that, too heavenly bound to be of any earthly good. Where all and we go through that, it seems to be like a spiritual kind of initiation where we get so much information coming in and we're not grounding it. I would call people respectfully space cadets when they went through those stages because they had so much information and insight. And when they'd share it with everybody, you could either think that they were just wacky and crazy because it wasn't all connecting and making sense, or you could see them for what was going on, which was so many doubts. downloads and they weren't getting a foundation to it. So you were experiencing all of that while looking after two kids and a husband. Wow.
And having Ross River virus as well.
Wow.
So
Wow.
it's funny because I look back at that time and I'm like, you know, it was heaven and hell on earth in one,
Yes.
because these profound insights were explaining so many questions that I had had. But, you know, at the same time, you know, physically, you know, the work that I was having to do and the way, you know, just I was feeling internally, physically, you know, it's hard to explain exactly what it's like, but, you know, it was like physical hell. So it's
Yeah,
like to touch those two elements at the one point in time.
how did you put one foot in front of the other? You just kept doing it. And I mean, that's where I
Kept doing.
suppose it's the blessing of having the children. It's the factor, because I can relate myself with my own story. I did so because of my kids, nothing else.
Yeah. And it's interesting too, because I think that, you know, this framework really pulled me through that period of my life. Because, you know, we have children and we expect it to be all, but, you know, there is that mundane aspect to it. And so when you're trying to get through a day and you're trying to do all the chores and be the mother and, you know, settle all the tantrums, you know, for me, I had to have that framework in my mind to keep my mind busy to pull me forward through that.
Sure.
I
So,
don't know what would have happened otherwise if I just would have absolutely crumbled.
so you had to have something to hang on to, something to hang on
Exactly.
to. And
Yeah.
okay, so wow, this framework must be important. So tell us about this framework. What is this?
So this framework, well, before I start the framework, can I tell you the end of the Ross River story?
Oh, of course, of course.
So the synchronicity in this is amazing. So I developed this framework, got it to the point where I was confident to do a healing. And the very first person that I did a healing on, a photonic healing on, I was chatting with her before and I told her about the Ross River journey I'd been on. And she said, "Oh, well, we have a family cure in the family, an old family cure. And you're not going to believe what it is, but it was to go out and get bitten by a bull ant."
Wow. Okay.
Was like, "Oh, okay then." And then, so I did the healing and the effects were really cool, but it was about 2 months later that, you know, I guess I had to psych myself up to go, "I'm going to go get bitten by a bull ant." So I went out and found one 2 months later. And, you know, I was there poking it with a stick and got it all angry. And then I put it on my arm and I was watching it bite me. And, you know, bull ant bites are known to be, you know, really strong and painful. Anyway, I was watching it and I was like, "I can't feel anything. It's not hurting at all." And so I'm like, "Is it actually biting me?" But then I started to feel a tingle. So I'm like, "Okay, it is." And I got the lump and everything. And about 3 days later, my fatigue lifted. And about 3 weeks later, the pain went away.
Wow.
Yeah. And so because Ross River sits within the nervous system, a bull ant bite flares the nervous system up again.
Ah, and
Yeah.
is there science to support that in terms of the bull ants?
It's not well documented.
Right.
Yeah, that's why I was so hesitant on actually going out to get bitten, because, you know, I'd asked Chinese doctors, I'd looked into research, and it's like, you know, there's no evidence to back this up. So I'm like, well, why would I go out and just get bitten by a bull ant when there's no evidence? But I kind of got to the point where I was that desperate and I had this, you know, I guess, option. So I'm like, well, I'm going to take it. At the end of the day, I'm either going to have a bull ant bite and nothing's going to happen, or something could actually change.
Yeah, and the only reason I'm asking that question is I'm not science-based, I'm evidence-based as far as I'm concerned. That's how the world works. But I just wanted, for those that are science-based that are listening, I wanted to know if they could go and have a look at something. But you know, you are the evidence that, you know, somebody says to you, go and get bitten by a bull ant, something in the, I don't think it's called venom or whatever it is that the bull ant has, goes and sorts out the nervous system somehow. So it's a chemical reaction of some sort going on. And wow, within days, you're a different woman.
Yeah, and the fact that it was the first person I did a photonic healing on, and the entire framework unfolded
Wow.
during the illness, which is just, yeah, there's something in that for sure.
Yes. Yes. Okay. So, all right, where do we go from here? You said there was something that I read in your paper that you sent to me. Dissolving emotional and energy constrictions. Now, a lot of people out there are all trying to do work on themselves. They're trying some sort of therapy. They're trying to, whether it's past lives, whether it's trauma-based, whether it's, inner child. There's a million different therapies all over the place these days. So, wow, I'm just interested myself in dissolving emotional energy.
So basically with dissolving emotional energy, so this framework for me, I've had to work backwards on it because I'm not science based either. Like I didn't study science, but I appreciate it and I think there's an absolute place for it.
Sure.
So I've tried my hardest to, make the framework scientific because I think that that's really important. And so, when we talk about a dissolving emotional residue, I did call it density. But now I'm calling it, so it's emotional suppression. So with emotional suppression, that's widely known. So when we suppress an emotion, so an emotion and state are two different things. An emotion, it's just a signal from our field. It's a signal from our field to our nervous system, from the external environment, and it's a communication. So emotions are meant to be listened, felt, and released. That's the natural progression of it. And when they're not, when we suppress them, that charge, that electrical charge, is suppressed into a part of our body. And so what it does at that point is it weakens that part of the body momentarily. So it creates a vulnerability within it, within an aspect of our body. And so imagine if from childhood you were suppressing an emotion, especially in a very charged emotion like anger, repeatedly, into a part of our body. That's what I guess, I have in the past called density, but now I'm calling, a vulnerability to us because it creates this permanent vulnerability within us. And,
Well,
it's
you can label it in a lot of ways, but the bottom line is it's an emotional charge sitting in your field.
Yes, exactly. And if it's constant, so when it is constantly sitting within our field. So it creates that. And whether it's a density or just a vulnerability, it needs to be addressed. And so, it's really learning when we look about our emotions to not be afraid of them and to actually see them for what they really are. They're a communication, They're actually the most correct communication and the most trusting communication that you'll actually have. Nobody on the external world will be as truthful as your own emotions. And that's the amazing thing. But they're just a communication. It's yourself communicating with yourself. Of course, you're going to have your best interest at heart.
Where unfortunately in this world, we've sort of said, oh my gosh, the 4-year-old had a problem and there's a story that goes with it and all that sort of stuff. You're saying, no, don't identify to that degree. Just, I suppose you're being a bit of an observer or a bit more impersonal and not being attached to it.
So when we talk about, I guess, tantrums and children having tantrums, if they're having a tantrum over something material, it's never about the thing. There's always an emotional underlay that's below that, okay? And whether that's associated with, attachment bonds, how safe they're feeling, and then the emotion becomes overwhelmed. But there's also the aspect that children are tiny and they're getting these huge emotions within them for the first time. And they're learning to express them.
Like volcanoes.
Absolutely. When they're expressing anger, that's about, boundaries. And it's not always about, just giving the child what they want. It's about accepting that that emotion's coming up and not shaming it.
And the
Because
same
when
for
we,
adults. And the same for adults. But for adults,
absolutely.
we've learned our immediate response is to push it back down or push it away again. So,
Or, create a mask. So we could be feeling an intense emotion inside of us, but completely calm on the external. That's not emotional regulation. That's masking. When we learn to have, become fluent with our emotions, we feel it. And, the more coherent we are, and coherence is, system-wide rhythm and regulation where all our parts are working together, it doesn't come on as, a super intense emotion. It comes on as a wave. And so whether that's, an action needs to be associated with that, whether that's, with sadness, we need to, just release it and have a little cry, or with anger, it's, we have to set a boundary, or with frustration, it's okay, well, what need am I neglecting here? Like every single emotion has a different communication, and it's not going to go away until we address that.
It's going
And
to keep cycling, yeah.
it's not just I don't like to say emotions are positive and negative because they're not. They all have their place. And we have the desirable emotions like joy and passion and curiosity, and then we have the less desirable, which are frustration and anger.
Sure.
And it's often the less desirable ones that we do push down because they're often the more confronting ones. But if we push down, if we get to the point where we're suppressing emotions so much, we don't just suppress the undesirable emotions,
Well, we're
we
taught
suppress
to.
all emotions.
Yeah, we're taught to because it's unacceptable behavior and all that sort of stuff. So we're
Yeah,
taught in
exactly.
a lot of
Yeah.
different ways. So, okay, this is part of the framework that you started putting together, and I love the language for it as well. You know, it's not getting into the old language. I really see that the new healing on this planet has a new language, and it's also quicker, it's faster, it's simpler than what we've had before. And that's exactly what you're talking about. I love this. Okay. So you also talk about stabilizing the nervous system.
So, I guess within my framework, I have, two pathways to growth that I've identified. And so that's the one, the emotional side, which we just talked about, learning your emotions, understanding them, learning not to suppress them. And then there's the other aspect, which is stabilizing our nervous system. But it's like you can't just stabilize your nervous system, you need to stabilize your entire body. And so, that works with coherence, but it also works with stabilizing states. So states are different from emotions,
Explain
right?
that one for me, because you've said that a couple of times now.
So states are different from emotions because we can't force an emotion. They're a communication. They come about, we can
They're
evoke
the
an emotion.
result. They're the result of something.
Exactly. And so, we can ev evoke an emotion by thinking about something, but we can't just say, I'm going to feel anger. It's like an example is like, you can't force yourself to love somebody if it's not there, if that emotion's not there.
Sure.
And so, states are different because states we can control. And so states we can anchor, whether consciously or unconsciously, they're that aspect within us that we can use to stabilize, expand, or contract ourselves.
So give me
And
an example. What is a state?
sure. So three pillars of states I've identified. And so the first is constricting states, which actively draw our energy inwards. And so that's fear, worry,
And
guilt,
we can feel
exhaustion.
that, can't we? We can feel that as soon as we pull back.
Yeah, absolutely. But, we can get to a point where we have a baseline state and we don't always feel it, but it's always running in our system. And so for most people, they have the learnt constricting states as their baseline. And so, if you think about the implications of that, because it's not our emotions that attract what we want and magnetize what we want, it's our states, because that's the baseline energy that we run through us.
So if
And
you've got a
so,
baseline state of constriction, you're going to attract more undesirable things to you.
well, you're going to attract more that's going to confirm that,
Right, gotcha.
because that's the resonance. So, if your resonance within you is of guilt, of fear, of worry,
Yep.
then you're going to attract the resonance of that. And whether that's you just picking that up consciously and it confirming that within you, it strengthens that. But when you consciously move from constriction to stabilization,
Yep.
that's where the difference really begins, because
That's
the
what I see.
stabilizing states are safety, trust, presence, devotion, gratitude. They're neutral within the posture that we hold them. And they're absolutely necessary next step from constriction. Because if we look at the next pillar of state, that's expansion. And expansive states, they actively draw our energy outwards. They broadcast further. And so they also bring about growth. And growth is, for those of you who know it, it's not comfortable, because with growth brings awareness of emotions that we've suppressed, of identities that we've held that need to fall away. And so it can be really uncomfortable, because as we process all of this, it happens within our nervous system, but our physical body feels the strain. And so, expansive states are love, peace, joy, power. And they're the states that everybody wants, But if you're jumping from a constricting state into an expansive state, what's going to happen? You're going to collapse because you don't have that stabilization within you. You don't have that stabilization to fall
That's a
back in on.
beautiful point. That's a beautiful point because people don't understand the central nervous system. They don't understand the power of it and the capabilities of it. And yes, you can't go from living on your nerves to not overnight. And having said that, though, for everybody listening, not all of you have to go through Ross River Fever to get there either. But
Absolutely not.
what I can see is you needed to go through the depths and the horror of that journey to come out with gold. You've got gold to share with everybody. You had to put yourself, sacrifice yourself to some degree, even though unwillingly at the time, to come out with such experiential insight and knowledge. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Okay. And it wasn't just the Ross River either, because it's been a journey of me creating meaning and then having to strip that away so that I can actually come out with something that's meaningful. Because, we put meaning onto things, and that's what's happened, I guess, in the world of growth and spirituality when we simply talk about energy or vibration. We project meaning onto it, but then that takes away from the mechanism underneath and really
I also see
understanding
that
that.
as attachment. That's attachment, and we cannot
Well,
be
we
attached.
attach through meaning, don't we?
Yes. And if you do that, then there's no room for growth. There's no room for movement.
Absolutely. So for me, it's been quite confronting as well, not just the Ross River journey, but to have collapses of, meaning and identity that I once felt safe embodying, and having to go through that, that collapse and that, facing the real truth of, oh, okay, that wasn't actually real. And moving beyond that and saying, well, okay, how can it actually work if we look deeper into this?
And tell me, like every time you do make that shift, that change for yourself, it's a reward, isn't it? It's you wouldn't say to somebody, oh, look, don't do this because jeepers, then this happened, but it's a reward.
I guess so. Yeah. But I like to see it as, I guess I've gone through this. And I've gone through this process so that not everybody has to. Because once we have this framework and we understand it, because this isn't just a modality, it's an entire framework and an architecture that so many other modalities sit within, and it explains them and joins them all together. It's the underlying, architecture and mechanics of it, of growth, that can be taken in so many different directions, which is really beautiful.
It's consciousness. It's simply consciousness. And I want to just encourage people out there that when you start doing something like if they come and have a healing with you, or they start to look at their emotion and their states, and they start to do some work with themselves, when I said rewarded, what I mean is that life is always better. It gets better and better and better. But if we try to hold on to the old paradigms and the old states and structures of this world, you're going to suffer. That's hell, isn't it? That's hell. You're going to suffer. So, oh, I think what you're doing is absolutely phenomenal, love. I think it's beautiful because it's new consciousness, it's new energy, it's new language.
And the thing I hesitated with reward before, because for me it's been all about the work now. The reward for me is seeing the change in others. And the whole premise of this and the modality of this is that coherence entrains. And so within the healing, it's me sitting within, a high amplitude coherent state and watching the other person attrain to that. And then seeing, what happens after that. And so for me, the reward isn't so much in the work, it's seeing the impact of the work. And it's still a baby. It's still, getting out there. And so, I believe that the real reward's still to come.
I think that's wonderful. And what I love more than anything is, when we are consciousness and connecting with the fundamentals of that consciousness, which some people call love, there's all sorts of different names for it. You just naturally are inclined to go, oh my gosh, I have to help others. I have to help others. And, we need to thank you firstly for going through the experience, right? And through going through the dark night of the soul and whatever other labels it's been called, because you needed the experiential evidence of that, that then put a framework together and go, all right, everyone else needs to do this now.
Yeah, exactly. Because I'm the kind of person who can't sit there and confidently talk about something unless I've embodied it.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
And I think that's the new language as well. There's a transparency that's coming out now. And nothing can be hidden, so to speak, anymore, like it has in so many different aspects of the world. If we're going to move into even telepathy and talents like that, there can't be any more worrying about what you're thinking and saying and doing about others. Yeah.
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
But when we look at states, we all perceive states. We all perceive the states of others. That in itself is truthful. You can't lie with your states, because you could say I'm embodying the state of safety, but if you feel that mismatch, like it's
Yeah.
like, well, no, you're not actually. And so, even words. So, I guess, if somebody's lying, or if, a slogan is lying, or you kind of see and feel those lies more because you feel that it's incoherent. So it's like with this work and, with being a practitioner, it's like, well, you have to embody that coherence. Otherwise, you can't do it. You can't entrain somebody else's coherence if you're not coherent yourself.
And it's something I said to somebody yesterday. The right reason I'm doing this radio show is to give people a voice so they can be heard. And that's my story. That's my story. So I went through the fire just like you have to get to a point where, if I didn't own my voice and if I didn't own my story, then my energetics cannot help anybody else to do that. And that's where I see the incoherence with therapies out there. I've seen it for a long, long time, but I think it's going to become more obvious. How can you go to somebody, no matter what sort of title they have or degree they have, and want them to help you with trauma if they haven't been through the trauma? They can't
Yeah,
help you, can they?
absolutely not. Because they can't understand where you're coming from. They can't know what you're feeling. They can't know what you're embodying. And therefore, they just go back on what they've been taught.
Yes.
But, we're beginning to learn that the things that we've been taught in history aren't always correct. And it's not that, it's being untruthful for the sake of being untruthful. It's being untruthful for the sake of being unaware.
Yes, it was
And
just the way
so,
it was. We don't need to look back at that. We just move on from it, right? So coherence is vital, vital. This has to be a part of our language now, doesn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. It's fundamental to it as well. And if we don't have a system that's running in sync, and when I talk about a system, it's how we broadcast, it's our nervous system, it's our physical body and caring and nourishing for that, and also our emotions. We can't anchor a state effectively. And so for somebody who's been through trauma, and there are people out there who've been through really horrific things, if you're running an incoherent system, you're more likely to have a constricting state. To process trauma through a constricted state is re-traumatizing. But
Impossible.
if you're processing trauma through a stabilizing state of safety and trust and presence, it completely changes it.
Sure. Wow.
But even for those who don't, necessarily want to do trauma work, if you want to create more magnetism in your life and embody, the things that you want, then, that's about embodying, freedom and joy and love to attract the things that you want. So, for those that want to just change their lives,
Well,
you can.
constriction doesn't equal trauma. Trauma is just
Yeah, exactly.
one degree of it. Constriction can be just like I said before, I wanted a voice. I wanted to be heard when I was a child. So I ended up being an adult, helping other people have a voice and be heard.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
So it can
Yep.
be as simple as that, but that can be destabilizing for you if you're carrying it around.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And you see the world today, it's like coherence entrains, but incoherence entrains too. And so with a world that's full of constriction, of course that's going to be, it's going to be easier to be constricting, because that's the general consensus.
Yes,
And it's more
everything.
challenging to be stabilizing and expansive because that's pushing the norms. And so, when I talk about, even as a global society, at the moment we're constriction, but everyone's like, world peace, world love. It's like, no, you can't aim for, expansion from constriction. We need to be aiming for, global trust, global safety before we can even think about peace or love.
We are creating new paradigms. It's as
Absolutely.
that's obvious, right? And that's why, people need to support, encourage people like you, because you're at the forefront of a new paradigm where, as you say, the majority of the world out there is still very constricted and still very in that energy. And we're creating something new, aren't we? So how
Absolutely.
can
And it's
people be?
exciting.
It's more than exciting, love. I've lost words, right? It's lovely, lovely, lovely. How can people get in touch with you? What's your website?
Sure, my website is www.willtoflow.com. Great for my work, but also named after my daughters too. So yeah, it
That's
works
great.
in two aspects. So
That's
that's my
lovely.
website, and then I've got my Instagram too at WillToFlow. So I'm active on that, and then yeah, I'm open with my website,
And
and
people, I'll put the links here. They'll be here with this interview as well. And what about the book? How are you going with the book? Where are you at with that?
The book is good. It's getting along. It's of course it's testing because every time I go to do a reread of the manuscript, I'm like, oh, okay. It's
Okay,
like,
yes.
an evolution upgrade. So, I wanted to get the manuscript finished by the end of March, but I've only got about 3 hours a week to work on it. But that's my aim. So I'm very close. It's just refining, the fundamentals and making sure that it's really correct. And that, everything's been questioned, basically.
Fabulous. Well, we're all behind you on that because this needs to get out to the world. It's as simple as that, right? So we're all behind you, but I understand I've written my own book. And when you do that, the perfectionist comes out of nowhere.
I know it's crazy. Of course.
Until you get to a point where you just got to hit the button on go. Or
Yeah, that's
we
it.
wish you all the best with doing that. And look, it's been a joy, love. I like, thank you for sharing, as I said, some of the darker times and some of the, it's hard to expose yourself to the world, because the world is full of a lot of constriction, which is criticism and judgment and all sorts of things. But thank you so much for doing that, because we need that energy out there. We need that as part of the shift that we're all living through at the moment. Your story is amazing. Your life is amazing. And we're going to have to interview again up the road a bit to see just what has shifted in the meantime as well. But for people that want to know about you, go to the website. You also offer private sessions, one-on-one sessions with people as well. So if they want to experience what this is about, go ahead, people, and do that. Thank you, Annette. Thank you so much for being on the show.
My absolute pleasure, Helen. It's been wonderful to finally be able to sit down and talk about this.
Yes, absolutely. So the word's out there now. Off we go. Thank you so much, love. Thank you.
Helen.